You said your father, Woody, went to the school at Shalako.
Mm-hmm.
Was that an Indian school?
Yes, it was. But it was a federal Indian school, which was an outgrowth, of course, of the Department of War. It was a function of assimilation and a genocidal function.
Genocidal.
In that when people are removed from their language and their community, the culture begins to be affected. And that was not in a positive way. It was not intended to contribute to Indian community, but to make a white man out of the Indian. And that is the definition of cultural genocide, a definition of it.
I guess at that point, there weren't any other schools for Indians to attend.
There were a lot, and they were all federal. Some were church. Some were church, which was about the same thing, just a different language.
The thought back then, of course, was to, as you've already stated, make white men out of these people.
Right.
And they had no regard for their culture at all.
They had regard. It was disregard.
So then he was there 2, 3, 4 years?
I don't think he was there that long. It was a rough experience.
Do you sense somewhere in here that he's revealing his artistic side?
Not yet. Do you want to hear about Shalako?
I do.
Well, we drove through there one time. My brother and I were sitting in the back seat, and as we passed by different buildings, he would say, "I broke rock for that building. Broke rock for that one. Broke rock for that one. Broke rock for that one." You got to understand that my father was born as a child of mixed blood, and he wasn't a fluent first language Potawatomi language speaker. So he did not speak Potawatomi a whole lot, but he had a lot of friends that did, and there was commonly understood languages between the boys. And whenever they would talk Indian, as they said, it would be an infraction, and they would be thrown on the rock pile for a while. And they broke rock. You go through Shalako, those rocks that those buildings are made out of were broken and shaped by the Indian students that were there.
Where is Shalako?
It's on the Kansas line. I'd have to get out a map to see exactly. You have to go there on purpose. It's not too far off the road, but it's not on 35. It's near there. Anyway, they didn't receive enough food. They received government-issue food that was very poor quality. Their breakfast cereals, for instance, had just about been consumed already by the weevils. And they would take a spoon first thing, and they would skim off the weevils and eat what was left. And once in a while, he said, some of the guys would run out for a night, kill a cow and build a fire and eat all they could and then come back. They just didn't get enough to eat. Corporal punishment was common. But they came through, okay, and there's a fine fellowship of people that came through Shalako. It's a hard story. It's a hard segment of history that appears everywhere where you have shifting populations and shifting governments. Unfortunately, it's a story of man's inhumanity to man, with just particular names and dates and times tacked on to this and called Shalako, Oklahoma Territory.
We don't know how many years he was there.
No, we don't.
How did you ever get out of there? Did you have to escape? Did you finally graduate? Or how did you leave that place?
I don't know. Maybe he just walked away one day.
Did he feel that he received some formal education? Any education?
No, I don't think so. I don't believe he never said that he got anything out of that except
discipline.
A discipline and a short haircut.
As I understand, he really received no schooling past the third grade, then not much at Shalako. But I think by the time he was 19, he did get a scholarship from the American Indian Institute in Wichita,
yes.
Kansas.
Yes. I don't know very much about that at all. I do know that it was an extension of the sketchy education that he had received up to that time. But he was ready and stepped off and received so much from it. It was then we began to see some development of his artistic leanings.
But there was an art teacher in Anadarko, Susie Peters.
Susie Peters was actually a dorm mother that took a lot of the boys under her wing and provided them with things like paper bags to draw on, paper.
Oh, she was at the American Indian Institute in Wichita. That's where she was a dorm mother.
Mm-hmm.
So she supplied him with the basics and of drawing mm-hmm. and painting.
Mm-hmm.
So by sometime in Chilaca or whatever, he was showing a bent for art. I'm betting he did.
I'm betting that he did, too.
He drew in the ground or he painted rocks or he did something. He had to. he had to. Because when they're born with this, it seems it just has to come out of them.
Mm-hmm.
Then he graduated from there, and as I understand, he graduated valedictorian of his class in 1933. And then he goes on to attend Wichita University, taking classes in mural painting and that type of thing, and watercolor painting. While he didn't early on have an education, he was obviously very bright, very smart to enter and then to graduate like he did.
Right. He was ready.
He also was a dancer.
Probably what you're referring to in large part was when he formed a group of men and women to do a WPA tour, and they took the dance
work,
around to different
work
sites.
Work progress
mm-hmm.
projects that Franklin Roosevelt had set up across the United
Correct.
States, and so he'd go dance for the WPA workers.
Correct, and right. take the group around. There was music, singing, flute, drum, lots of different pan-Indian, you might say. Costumes, regalia of all kinds.
You just marvel at how much talent he had. He wins a national dance contest in 1935. Later tours with the Thurlow Lawrence Symphony in dancing, which we might point out, as we'll get into later, his dancing influenced his art.
Definitely. That's where he became very familiar with regalia and the construction of it, then the different types of regalia that different tribes wore.
But he was not finished with his education, because then in 1936 to 38, he attended the University of Oklahoma in Norman,
mm-hmm.
and he studies painting and drawing under Oscar B. Jacobson. He advanced the careers of many American Indian artists.
Right, especially the Kiowa Five, of which by that time my father was a good friend of and worked with the Kiowa Five, although not officially one of the five. There were Kiowa Six, you know.
Tell me what the Kiowa Five was.
Five young men, Kiowa men, that were artists. All of them, one way or another, became good friends of our father's and were artists. And supported him by Susie Peters at that time also.
And that's something, how one person, when they want to step out from their routine and when they see talent, want to say, I can encourage this. And this Susie Peters then obviously influenced not only her father but many others. There ought to be a statue set up to her someplace.
There's a photograph of her in the documentary that I did.
Okay.
Yeah. She's been recognized. I don't know that there is a statue.
We talk about him dancing, and then you've already talked about him being a flute player, but he even performed as a flautist with the Wichita Symphony.
Mm-hmm.
Look at all the areas that he could have excelled in or stayed in as a musician, as a dancer.
It's just one thing about the flute playing. Indian way of playing the flute. You have a song that comes to you as a gift from the Creator to you. And a lot of times, a flute player will only have one song. And that's their song of their being in their life, the fiber of their being. Today, with the technology as it is and movements in the world and broadcast, some people have added a lot of songs to their repertoire and are performers. But I never heard our father play anything but his song. One tune, ever.
That was his gift that had been given to him.
Yes.
And I guess then they never tried to learn another tune.
It would have been someone else's tune. There's no other tune that has more power than your song. There's no reason to learn another song.
Huh.
No reason.
So is the flute an important instrument to Native Americans, at least to the Potawatomis?
Mm-hmm. Flute appears all over the world, doesn't it? It's breath made manifest in song. And breath is life.